Imagine you're lying on an operating table. You're completely under anesthesia, just totally vulnerable.
Right, the ultimate vulnerable position.
Exactly. And an AI-driven robotic surgeon is hovering above you. Suddenly, the machine makes this bizarre, totally unconventional incision. I mean, it looks like a complete
Like
mistake.
a glitch in the system.
Yeah. But hours later, you wake up and you're perfectly healthy. In fact, that weird incision actually saved your life.
Which is incredible.
It is. But when the hospital programmers pull the logs to see, what the machine actually did, they realize something truly terrifying. Absolutely no one on Earth knows why the machine decided to make that cut.
Yeah, it is the ultimate diagnostic mystery. I mean, you have an outcome that is undeniably successful, right? But the reasoning behind it is completely sealed off from human understanding. We're rapidly moving into a landscape where the machine is almost always right, but it completely refuses to tell you how it got there.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We are thrilled to have you with us today because we are looking at the exact collision point between messy human morality and the cold, calculated world of artificial intelligence.
It's a fascinating topic.
It really is, and we've got a fantastic stack of sources for you today. The material centers on two deeply interconnected documents. First, a rigorous academic framework for evaluating AI ethics.
And the second is a graduate-level lecture transcript, which is just brilliant.
So good. It pulls back the curtain on the black box of AI explainability, along with this legal concept called redress.
The mission for this deep dive is to get past the basic tech buzzwords. We are going to look at the actual mechanics of how human values are, hard-coded into algorithms, and the mathematical reasons why these incredibly advanced systems inevitably become impossible for us to understand. Plus, ultimately, who takes the fall when a machine like that makes a fatal error?
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to even begin to understand why an AI makes an inexplicable mistake or an inexplicable success, for that matter, we have to start at the very beginning. How do you even teach a machine what a mistake is?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. The source material argues that before we get to the code, we have to look at the human element, the lived experience of morality.
Yeah, and that is the actual foundation of the academic framework we're looking at. Before a programmer types a single line of code, we have to acknowledge how you and I actually practice ethics in the real world.
Because it's not a spreadsheet.
Exactly. Think about a time you had to make a really tough moral call. You didn't pull out a calculator and run an equation.
Definitely not.
You felt a tension, right? You weighed your empathy against your principles. You looked at the context. You maybe factored in your relationship with the people involved. It is entirely fluid.
It's completely messy. I mean, human ethics rely incredibly heavily on moral uncertainty. We hesitate, we agonize over decisions.
We really do.
We recognize that sometimes there is no correct answer, just the least bad one. But a machine can't operate on maybe, or I have a bad feeling about this. It needs an optimized output.
Which is the immense challenge of the second layer our sources discuss, which is the technical definition.
The technical definition, yeah.
Right. This is the battleground of algorithmic value alignment. How do you take that fluid human intuition, formalize it, quantify it, and actually encode it into an algorithm?
It sounds impossible.
It's definitely difficult. When a team of data scientists sits down to build a self-driving car, they have to choose a philosophical grounding, whether they realize they're doing it or not. The text actually brings up major ethical frameworks to illustrate this, specifically deontology and consequentialism.
Let's ground those terms for a second because that sounds like philosophy 101, but we need to know how it actually translates into code.
Sure. So deontology is rule-based ethics. Think of it as absolute commands, like thou shalt not cross a double yellow line no matter what the context is.
Got it. Strict rules.
Right. Now, consequentialism, on the other hand, is entirely about the outcomes. The ends justify the means. You want to maximize the good for the greatest number of people.
But how does a computer actually process that? I mean, you can't just type maximize the good into Python and expect the car to know what to do.
No, you definitely can't. You have to build what engineers call a cost function or a reward function. You literally have to assign mathematical weights to human values.
Wow. Okay, give me an example.
Let's look at the consequentialist approach for a self-driving car. The programmers have to assign a numerical penalty to different negative outcomes. Maybe hitting a traffic cone is a minus 10 penalty.
Okay.
Hitting another car is a minus 1,000 penalty.
That makes sense.
But hitting a pedestrian is a minus 100,000 penalty. The algorithm's only goal is to navigate the road while keeping that overall negative score as close to zero as possible.
See, I have to push back on the very feasibility of this entire phase. Trying to translate lived human ethics, you know, the agony of a moral choice, into a mathematical penalty score, it feels like a trap.
How so?
It's like trying to explain the taste of an apple using only algebraic equations.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Right, because you can measure the sugar content, you can calculate the density of the flesh, you can even measure the acoustic velocity of the crunch.
Yeah, the literal sound of it.
Exactly. But the actual subjective experience of tasting the apple, it is inevitably lost in translation. Something vital just vanishes when you turn morality into math.
You are capturing the exact friction that the academic framework highlights. And that friction, it just explodes when we reach the third layer, which is real-world functionality.
Because the simulation isn't the real world.
Precisely. Because it's one thing to assign a -100,000 penalty to hitting a pedestrian in a controlled simulation.
Mm.
It is another thing entirely when that code hits the actual streets.
Oh, yeah.
The real world is full of edge cases. A pedestrian dressed in a giant chicken suit. A reflection on a glass building that looks exactly like a truck.
The unexpected.
Exactly. The rigid math of the cost function meets the absolute chaos of reality.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because the algorithm isn't just staying stagnant when it hits that reality. To deal with all that chaos, the math has to get vastly more complex. It has to learn.
It does.
Which brings us to the core impediment of this whole deep dive. The black box trade-off.
Yes, we are hitting the absolute limit of human comprehension here. If translating human values into math is already deeply flawed, what happens when the math becomes so layered and so advanced that the humans who wrote it can no longer read it?
That is the explainability problem. And honestly, it's wild to think that we are building systems that we literally cannot understand.
It's a bit unnerving.
Let's define explainability the way the lecture source does, because the professor uses a highly relatable example, a human doctor giving a cancer diagnosis.
Yes, the medical example perfectly illustrates human expectation. When an oncologist tells you that you have cancer, you don't just accept the output and walk out of the room.
No, you have a million questions.
Yeah, exactly. You demand explainability. You want the doctor to point to the anomaly on the MRI to explain their reasoning, to walk you through the biological markers.
We need the narrative. The narrative is how our brains process reality and build trust. We need the why and the how.
But the central impediment we're facing in AI right now is a brutal, direct trade-off between performance and explainability. To get the best performance, like to catch the cancer earlier than any human doctor ever could, we use complex neural networks.
Right.
And by their very design, neural networks destroy the narrative.
Let's pause and actually explain the mechanics of that. Why does a neural network destroy the narrative? Why can't we just look at the code and see what it did?
Because a neural network doesn't process information in a straight line. It uses hidden layers of artificial neurons. Imagine millions of tiny mathematical nodes.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
When the AI looks at an MRI, it doesn't look for a tumor the way a human does. It breaks the image down into individual pixels. One layer of nodes analyzes the shading, another analyzes the shapes, another looks at the density.
So it's completely fragmented.
Completely. And here is the kicker. Every single node assigns a numerical weight to its finding and passes it to the next layer, which adjusts the weight again.
So it's not a list of rules anymore.
Not at all. It is a staggering matrix of millions, sometimes billions, of overlapping probabilities and weights. The computer routes the data through all these hidden layers and spits out a highly accurate diagnosis, like 99% probability of cancer. But if you ask the AI why, it can't point to a spot on the scan. It can only offer you a spreadsheet with a billion rows of microscopic decimal adjustments.
That's terrifying.
Neither the patient nor the doctor nor the original programmer can retrace the exact path the machine took to arrive at the answer. It is a literal black box.
It's wildly unsettling, and the lecture brings up a massive philosophical debate here. If a machine produces better results than a human-like, if the AI catches the cancer earlier and statistically saves more lives, does the fact that it works justify not understanding why it works?
That is the multi-billion-dollar question. If the performance is quantifiably superior, do we really need the explanation?
I mean, in a sterile laboratory, maybe we don't. But we don't live in a lab. Let's look at the real-world stakes the source introduces with the driverless car.
Okay, let's look at it.
Let's say the data proves the autonomous car is statistically much safer than a human driver. That's a huge win, right?
Absolutely.
But then, on a random Tuesday, it causes a fatal accident. It swerves into oncoming traffic for a reason literally no one can decipher. Was it a shadow? Was it a glitch in the cost function? No one knows. To me, a black box AI is like having a brilliant but entirely mute coworker.
A mute coworker.
Yeah. Imagine you have an office mate who perfectly completes every single massive project you give him, but he can never tell you how he did it. He just drops the flawless finished report on your desk.
Okay, I'm tracking.
You trust him, right? The work speaks for itself. You trust him completely. Right up until the building catches on fire because of a chemical mix-up he made, at that exact moment, his silence becomes a massive liability.
Because you can't ask him what went wrong.
Exactly. When things go wrong, human beings demand words. We demand an explanation.
What's fascinating here is that this human desire for explainability isn't just about intellectual curiosity. It is fundamentally rooted in our deeply ingrained need for accountability.
We want someone to blame.
Yes. We need to blame someone when things go wrong, and we need to credit someone when things go right. The lecture actually calls this the accountability gap.
The accountability gap. I like that.
When the mute coworker burns down the building, who is legally and morally responsible, the coworker who can't speak, or the manager who hired him knowing he couldn't speak.
And society demands an answer to that. If we are going to live side by side with unexplainable algorithms that occasionally cause catastrophic harm, like the fatal car crash, we need a system of justice.
You do.
How on earth do you extract justice from a spreadsheet of a billion decimal points?
This is exactly what legal scholars and ethicists are wrestling with right now. Our modern legal system is built on human intent and human negligence. A black box has neither. The lecture source lays out four distinct strategies for redress, four practical ways we are trying to bridge this accountability gap.
Okay, I really want to dig into these because reading through the sources, some of these feel like massive, clumsy band-aids on a broken arm. What's the first strategy?
The first strategy is called the doctrine of the learned intermediary.
That's a mouthful.
It is. You can think of this as the human-in-the-loop approach. The core idea is that the AI is only legally allowed to propose actions, but a human must remain in ultimate physical control.
So this is like Tesla's autopilot.
Exactly. The car's neural network can steer, it can accelerate, it can change lanes, but the human driver is legally required to keep their hands on the wheel and their eyes on the road, ready to take over in a split second.
It's all in the driver.
Right. The manufacturer argues the car is technically safer, but the legal and moral responsibility remains entirely with the human in the driver's seat.
I have such a massive problem with this one. The source points out the logical contradiction, and it is glaring.
Oh, it really is.
The entire point of buying a fully autonomous vehicle is so you don't have to drive. You want to take a nap, you want to read a book, you want to safely text.
You want the convenience.
Right. Requiring a human intermediary completely defeats the fundamental purpose of the technology. It's like buying a state-of-the-art automatic dishwasher, but the manufacturer says you are legally required to stand there with a sponge and scrub the plates alongside it just in case the machine misses a spot.
That's a great analogy.
It's a legal shield for the corporation, not a real solution for the user.
It is definitely a halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
It asks human beings to maintain high alert vigilance while doing absolutely nothing, which psychological studies show we are terrible at.
We really are. Yeah. So if the human in the loop isn't the answer, liability has to travel up the chain. That leads to the second strategy, right?
Right.
Blaming the creator.
Yeah, right.
Blaming the creator.
Okay, this makes more intuitive sense. If my dishwasher floods my kitchen, I don't sue the dishwasher, I sue the manufacturer. They built the monster, so they are responsible when it breaks loose.
Hmm.
It sounds logical, but it breaks down under the realities of the black box.
Okay.
Well, how can you justly hold a programmer accountable for an action they genuinely couldn't foresee and didn't explicitly program?
Ah, right. Because of the neural network.
Exactly. It warps our traditional legal understanding of negligence. Usually, negligence means you failed to take reasonable care.
Right.
But if a team of data scientists did everything perfectly by the standards of their field, trained the model on clean data, tested it rigorously, and the neural network still developed an unpredictable, lethal quirk out in the real world, blaming the creator starts to feel legally and ethically shaky. They didn't write the rule that caused the crash. The machine wrote it.
So we can't blame the driver because they were relying on the tech. We can't blame the programmer because the tech rewrote its own logic. Who is left? The machine itself.
Which brings us to the third strategy, and it's a wild one. legal personhood for AI.
You have to be kidding. We are genuinely discussing treating an algorithm like a person.
Not a natural person, but an artificial person.
Yeah.
We need to slow down and look at the precedent here, because we already do this with corporations.
Okay, fair point.
A corporation isn't a human being with a soul or a pulse. But legally, under the concept of corporate personhood, it acts as a distinct entity.
Right.
A corporation can enter contracts, it can own property, it can be sued, and it can commit crimes.
Right. When a massive company pollutes a river, we don't put their headquarters building in jail.
Precisely. We punish the corporate entity itself, usually with massive monetary fines. The argument scholars are making is that we could do the exact same thing with an autonomous AI.
Granting it personhood.
Yes. We grant the algorithm itself a form of legal personhood. When it causes harm, you treat it as an independent entity, and you extract a financial penalty from an insurance fund tied to that AI or from the organization that owns it.
But the source text nails exactly why this feels so wrong. It notes the profound human hollowness of this approach.
Human hollowness, yes.
Let's go back to the fatal car crash. If an unexplainable AI kills a pedestrian, and the legal system's only response is to fine the AI's parent company $1 million, who is actually suffering.
No one, really.
Right. The shareholders lose a fraction of a cent on their quarterly stock portfolio. That does not satisfy the deeply human need for true accountability. We want a person to look in the eye. We want a throat to choke. A fine is just the cost of doing business. It's totally hollow.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what we are seeing is that trying to force 20th century legal concepts onto 21st century black box technology is a terrible fit. We are trying to use old tools on a fundamentally new type of entity.
So what's the alternative?
That leads us to the fourth and final strategy from the lecture, and this one might actually be the most practical. It's called redress by design.
Redress by design, meaning we stop trying to fix it with lawsuits and build the solution directly into the technology itself?
Exactly.
How does that work?
There are two flavors of this approach. The first is basically a mandate to dumb down the machine.
Dumb it down.
Yeah. We pass regulations that legally prohibit the use of unexplainable neural networks for high-stakes decisions. If the AI is deciding on a medical treatment or driving a car, you must use simpler algorithms like decision trees.
What's a decision tree?
It's basically a massive flowchart. A human can clearly trace the logic from point A to point B.
Wait, so we intentionally make the AI worse. We sacrifice the 99% accuracy of the neural network for, say, an 85% accuracy of a decision tree, just so we can understand it.
Yes. It intentionally sacrifices peak performance to guarantee accountability.
That is a fascinating trade-off. What's the second flavor?
The second flavor is providing actionable user feedback without actually needing to explain the whole system.
Okay.
The source gives a great example of a bank's loan application algorithm. An AI analyzes your financial data and rejects your mortgage application. Because it's a black box, the bank can't tell you the exact mathematical weight it gave to your zip code versus your credit history.
So you're just stuck.
But by design, the system must offer redress.
How if it can't explain itself?
The system automatically runs 1,000 simulated applications similar to yours to find the closest scenario that results in an approval.
Oh, that's clever.
Right. Then it spits out an actionable step. It tells you, we cannot explain the exact reasoning for the denial, but if you pay off $500 of credit card debt and wait 2 months, your next application will be approved.
So it doesn't give you the why, but it gives you the how to fix it.
Exactly. You don't need to understand the billion rows of the neural network spreadsheet. You just get an actionable path forward. It gives the user a sense of agency and redress without breaking the power of the black box.
So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive by looking at the human element, how incredibly difficult it is to translate messy, fluid, lived human values into the rigid algebra of code.
It's a massive hurdle.
It really is. We saw how pushing that code for better performance inevitably creates a black box, a neural network that works perfectly but acts like a mute coworker when the building catches on fire.
And we've just waded through the incredibly clumsy legal frameworks we are inventing to try and assign blame when that inevitable fire happens.
It has been quite a journey, from lived experience to technical reality and finally to legal compromise. And it reveals a fundamental, unresolved tension in modern society. We want perfect machines, but we desperately want human accountability.
We want the flawless, superhuman output, but we want someone to take the blame when the system fails.
And the math is telling us very clearly that we cannot have both.
We can't.
We have to choose what matters more to us, which is something I want you, the listener, to really think about today. How are you interacting with unexplainable algorithms in your own life right now?
They're everywhere.
They really are. From the automated resume filters that decide if you even get a job interview, to the loan algorithms, to the autonomous vehicles sharing the highway with your family, are you accepting the trade-off?
This raises an important question, and it's the thought we want to leave you with today. It forces a direct choice between the two competing ethical goods we've been discussing.
Okay, lay it on us.
Imagine you, or someone you love deeply, become seriously ill. You are presented with two treatment options.
Okay.
Option A is prescribed by an advanced, completely unexplainable AI. It operates as a total black box, but statistically, it guarantees a 99% survival rate. It cannot tell you why this specific cocktail of drugs will work, only that it will.
And the other option?
Option B is a treatment plan designed by a brilliant, empathetic human doctor. They can explain every single step of their reasoning to you, look you in the eye, hold your hand, and answer every why you have, but their success rate is only 80%.
Wow.
So do you value perfect performance, or do you value knowing exactly who is making the choice and who to blame if it all goes wrong?